So this morning, we come to the end of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not covet. And covet is a word that we really don't use very much in our everyday language. So I thought we would start this morning by figuring out exactly what it means to covet. Some words that I think are very close in meaning and some attitudes that may go along with coveting are jealousy and envy. Now, jealousy is this feeling that I feel when something that belongs to me, or at least I think it belongs to me, and it's in the control of someone else. Envy and coveting are different from jealousy in that they focus on things that I know don't belong to me, but I'd really like them to belong to me. Envy is that feeling that I feel toward you when you possess something that I would really like to have. And coveting is the feeling that I feel toward the item that I really, really want. I really, really want it. That thing that's just going to make my life complete. That thing that just I can't have, but I really want. It'll make my life worth living. It'll finally satisfy me. That thing that I just can't live without. On a hot summer day, I might covet my neighbor's in-ground 8-foot pool because all I have is a little 20-inch kiddie pool. And as I look across the fence into my neighbor's yard, I see him floating there on top of that 8-foot of shimmering water, sipping on an iced tea or a lemonade, working on his tan. And I start to get this strange sensation bubbling up within me that makes me think something like this. What makes him so special? That he gets an 8-foot swimming pool and I just get to cool off my feet. Envy, my friends, focuses on the person that owns what you want, and covetousness focuses on the thing that you want. And I've already begun this morning to start talking about some of the things that can happen when we allow coveting to become part of our lives and some of the reasons why God forbids it. And that's what I want to do this morning. I want to look at four reasons why God forbids coveting, and then I want to look and see how, as disciples of Jesus, we should view the world, act in the world, and prepare for life eternal. First, God forbids coveting because it sets my heart on things of the earth and not on things of heaven. You know, the last few commands that we've looked at have been kind of short on details. And Pastor Timothy's done a wonderful job over the last several weeks of elaborating on them. But this command goes into a little bit more detail. It talks about different categories of things that we might be tempted to covet. So let's look briefly at them. A house. You know, a big part of my responsibilities as one of your pastors is that I get the joy of going to visit you. And this is a Boism. Remember, those are sayings of Bo. My grandma said, never pass up an opportunity to visit, because you'll always be blessed. People's really nice houses. I've been blessed over the years to see a lot of people's really nice houses. Some may be historic homes with large wraparound porches and white rocking chairs or porch swings. Some may have large modern kitchens. I was visiting one lady and she said, Alexa, turn on the stove. I didn't even know Alexa could turn on the stove. They may be on well-maintained lots and have a great view. They may have a large study with a top-of-the-line computer and a wraparound desk and bookcases with books. And they may be on a really nice lot. You know, and having a nice house is really important to some people, and to others, not so much. To some, having just the right house in just the right location is the pinnacle of success and satisfaction. Wife. You know, I saw a commercial a while back, and his whole family's in the kitchen eating breakfast. And the husband sits down, and he says something like this. You know, Mike next door gets a fresh breakfast every morning. His wife gets up at 5 a.m., makes the dough from scratch for the apple tarts, peels and cuts the apples that she picked off their apple tree in the backyard, cooks them and has them ready by the time Mike's alarm clock goes off and he gets up. All I get's cold cereal, and I made it myself. Well, his wife looks at him kind of disgusted and says, you know, if you'd like a home-cooked meal, maybe you should go next door. Now, the husband was implying that his wife should be more like Mike's wife. He wasn't coveting Mike's wife. He was coveting what Mike's wife did. And just to be fair, and as Pastor Timothy has said over the last several weeks, I'm going to pick on everybody this morning. Let's turn this around. Maybe some of you men have heard your wife say things like, you know, her husband takes out the trash, fixes dinner every night, does the dishes, feeds the baby in the middle of the night, brings her jewelry and flowers for no reason. Why can't you be more like that? Or maybe some of you parents have heard your children or your teens say words like this. How come I only get $5 for an allowance? My friends seem to be loaded. They get money anytime they want. All they have to do is ask their parents. How come I have to be home at such an early time? How come I have a curfew? Or I have a bedtime? I wish I had my friends' parents instead of you guys. Coveting. A manservant. You know, a servant in the home would make daily life much easier, wouldn't it? You wouldn't have to fix meals anymore. You may not have to do the laundry. You may not even have to watch your kids, depending on the type of servant you hire. And having a manservant would increase the ease and the prestige of our lives. In the modern day world, let's look at that. I've just got to have that top-of-the-line dishwasher like the Morris family has. I really need gas logs like I saw in their home. No more newspaper and matches for me to start the fire. Just push the button. I need one of those automatic car starters that like I saw in Randy's new car. It'd be so nice to not have to go out and scrape ice off the windshields in the morning. I could get in a nice, warm, cozy car and not a cold one. In short, I want things that other people have that make their life easier. Coveting. Ox or a donkey. You know, to the people in Moses' day and in Jesus' day, an ox or a donkey or some other beast of burden was essential to their lives, to their livelihoods. That's how they survived. That's how they brought in their crops. And in today's world, it's really easy, my friends, to covet another man's job, another person's source of income. My next-door neighbor makes twice as much as I do, and he spends most of his time out on the golf course with his clients. And I have to put up with a supervisor who cusses all day long and criticizes me when I didn't even do anything wrong. Coveting. And so far, we've looked at things that we can covet, a house or personal relationships or possessions or a different kind of job. But there's a lot more things that you can covet. And rather than try to list them all out, God closes this verse with the catch-all. Anything. That just about covers it, I believe. And it leaves you to investigate yourself, your motives, your own desires. What do you covet? Let's look if we can see if we can come up with a couple of more things. How about these? Do you covet someone else's sporting ability? Their marriage, their clothes, their bank account, their figure, their kids. Why can't you kids be more like the neighbor's kids? Do you covet someone else's teaching ability, their singing ability, or anything that you feel like they can do better than you can do? Second, my friends, God forbids coveting because it puts a barrier between me and my neighbor. One of the things that all of these things in verse 17 have in common, they all belong to my neighbor's house, my neighbor's wife, my neighbor's manservant. And since my neighbor has something that I want, that puts a spirit of competition between me and my neighbor. To a certain extent, my neighbor becomes my enemy because he's standing in the way of what I want, of my happiness. So what's my attitude supposed to be toward my neighbor? Well, Romans 13:9 answers that question. The commandments, do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, and whatever other commandment there is out there, are summed up in this one rule. Love your neighbor as yourself. My attitude toward my neighbor is supposed to be love. And it's kind of hard to love someone who's standing in the way of getting what you think you really need in order to be happy and satisfied in life. Friends, love is characterized by self-sacrifice, not self-gratitude. Love rejoices with those who rejoice and weeps with those who weep. And did you know churches can become covetous? The Wizard of Id is a popular comic strip, and in that comic strip, one day there's a monk, and he's putting up a sign on the bulletin board out in front of the church, and there's another monk visiting. The sign read the sermon for that weekend, "Thou shalt not covet." The visiting monk said, "Boy, I wish we had a signboard like that at our church." And it's very easy when things are not exactly what we would like them to be in our church to look at the church down the road and say, "Boy, I wish we had what they had. I wish we had their choir or their piano player or their building or their van or their givers or whatever else it is that we think they have that we would like." And the more we think like that, the more the other church, whether we realize it or not, becomes the enemy. Number three, God forbids coveting because it provides motivation for me to break all the rest of the commandments. Most of the commandments, at least on the surface, have to do with actions, lying and murder and using God's name inappropriately or adultery. But this commandment focuses on attitudes of our hearts. It provides motivation for me to break all the other commandments. If I'm not satisfied with the requirements that God's placed on me or the blessings that He gives me, I'll just put another God before Him. Beloved, do you know where coveted spirit comes from? It comes from two things, either a lack of satisfaction with what God has given us or dissatisfaction over the way that God hands out His blessings. I read a story about a dog, and this dog was given a special treat one night for his evening meal. It was this beautiful, beautiful piece of meat. And the dog carried the meal, hanging onto it with his mouth. And on the way to the place where he was going to enjoy this wonderful feast, he crossed a little bridge over a lake. And he happened to look down over the bridge into the glassy water beneath him, and he saw another dog. And he was holding a piece of meat, much like the one he had. Then he got an idea. If he could get that other piece of meat, then he'd have twice the meat. His meal would be even more wonderful. And he kind of sized it up, and the other dog looked smaller than he was, and he knew he could take him without any trouble. And that piece of meat that other dog was holding, oh, it was bigger than his. By the way, you know, that's what coveting does. It makes the legitimate owner seem smaller than they are, and it makes the prize look much bigger than it actually is. So without giving it another thought, he opened his mouth to reach for the second piece of meat. But as he did so, the piece of meat that he had in his own mouth fell in the water and sank. The dog walked away sad, for in trying to get what someone else had, which was only an illusion anyway, he lost what he had to begin with. Friends, not only are we not satisfied with what God has given us, we're not thankful for what he's given us. And the Bible tells us to give thanks in all things. By a show of hands, how many of you want to be happy? Come on, you can put your hands up. It's okay. We can be happy. You know, you can be happy leaving here this morning. And here's the key. Happiness doesn't come from getting what you want. Happiness comes from wanting what you get. When we refuse to be satisfied with what God has given us, we refuse to thank God for it, but we covet what our neighbor has, then we set ourselves up for falling into temptation to break the other 9 commandments. James 2:10 says, "For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at one point is guilty of breaking all of it." 4, God forbids coveting because it destroys me. Now this happens when you're so focused on what someone else has or what they're doing that you fail to see and take advantage of what God's given you. You spend all your time envying what others have, either their possessions or their skills, and there's no time left for you to develop and enjoy the gifts that God's given you. A rich man finds a man lazily sitting by his boat. "Why aren't you fishing?" asked the rich man. "Because I caught enough fish for today." "Why don't you catch more fish than you need?" the rich man asks. "What would I do with them?" came back the answer. "You could sell them for money. You could buy a better boat. You could go into deeper water. You could catch even more fish and make lots of money. Soon you would have a fleet of fishing boats and you could be rich just like me." The fisherman asked, "Then what would I do?" "You could sit down and enjoy life." "What do you think I'm doing now?" Friends, all the things we've talked about this morning have at least one thing in common. Each and every one of them is a part of this life. They're a part of the world that when we die, we're going to leave behind. What's our attitude supposed to be toward the things of this world? 1 John 2:15 tells us that. "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." So as a Christian, my focus is not supposed to be on me. It's supposed to be on Jesus and other people. And I'm not supposed to be focused on the things of this life instead of worrying about the things of this life and things that are only going to last a short time anyway. I'm supposed to focus on what I'm sending on ahead of me into eternity, how I'm preparing for eternity. Listen to Colossians 3, 1 and 2. "Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things." When I see my neighbor and what my neighbor has, I shouldn't be asking myself, "Wonder what his car would look like if it was sitting in my driveway." Or I wonder what it would be like to wear the kind of clothes she wears. Or I wonder what it would be like to wake up next to him every morning. No, my friends, the questions that we should be asking is, how can I use what God has already given me to build up his kingdom on earth for my reward in heaven? Would the things that I desire help me grow as a disciple, to be more like Jesus, to make it possible for me to minister to someone in a way that I can't right now? Jesus said in Matthew 6, 19 through 21, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Where was the rich fool's heart in our gospel reading this morning? In his possessions. And Jesus said in the reading, you know, in the very first verse that I read this morning, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of the things that he possesses." You know, that verse alone would totally alter the way we think and live if we truly believed it, if we truly lived it. Jesus warns us in this parable of the danger of pursuing wrong treasure in all of our life, and maybe even finding it, and then discovering we've missed really discovering life's eternal treasure. Such eternal treasure is found only in our relationship with the Lord. It's found in being content with who we are and what we have. In today's parable, the man's sin was not that he was successful. His sin was that he was selfish. He had that uncontrollable desire to acquire. He produced a good crop and thought only of himself. He neglected spiritual priorities, and as a result, his soul was required of him that very night. And everything that he had worked for, everything that he had prepared for, was for naught. Jesus said in the closing verse of our gospel reading this morning, "This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God." Friends, let me assure you, you can't take your earthly possessions with you. Not to heaven. Not to eternity. But you can take the love of God in Jesus Christ. That's all. That's it. The love of Jesus. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.